Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Lightspeed. Hello and welcome to the Lightspeed Magazine Story Podcast. I am Jim Freund, your host. In this episode, we will hear I Was a Teenage Space Jockey by Stephen Graham Jones, narrated by Scott Peterson. This work is copyright 2021. Lightspeed Magazine is edited by John Joseph Adams, and our podcast is produced by Skyboat Media. Stephen Graham Jones is the New York Times best-selling author of nearly 30 novels and collections, and there are some novellas and comic books in there as well. Most recent are My Heart is a Chainsaw and Memorial Ride. Stephen lives and teaches in Boulder, Colorado. So, let's buckle up. We're going to light speed.
I Was a Teenage Space Jockey by Stephen Graham Jones. 2 days after my brother turned 17, he was gone, just like he'd guaranteed my dad. No sad goodbyes, no notes, no taking a knee in the hall before dawn to give me any good advice for high school when I got there. My mom's story, when anybody asked, was that he'd moved out. He was old enough. He needed room. It was completely natural. My dad, if asked, would just shrug, knock back the rest of his can of beer, and say he hoped Rance was in the military, where someone else could tell him to get up, face the day. Just to piss my dad off, I secretly hoped Rance had gone military as well. Air Force, so that one morning, bright and early, he could buzz the house in his fighter jet, waggle his wings to announce it was really him, and then burst through the sound barrier, breaking every window on the block. If he did that, then I would know for sure that there was some way out, that there was something else. This was sixth grade for me, fall semester, ramping up to Halloween. Homeroom was all pumpkins and skeletons with brass rivets at their joints, so whoever was first to class could tack those white cardboard hands and feet up in looter and looter positions. My best friend that year, and for the rest of the years we'd have together, was Martin French. Me and him were the only Indians for two grades in either direction, and since he'd been held back 1 year, we were even in the same class now. His dad made him keep his hair long, not buzzed short like in my house, but Martin hated all the attention his braids drew in the halls, in P.E., in every bathroom we had no choice but to eventually brave. Yes, we knew it was the boys' room, not the girls'. Thank you, ha-ha. That one never gets old. Just because he had to have his hair in twin braids when he left for school, though, that didn't mean they wouldn't be down by the time he got to his locker before class. Down and puffing out all crinkly and metal, which meant he was always glaring out of a frizzy shroud of black, just the way he liked it. You'd think all the attention of being the only two red kids would turn us into scrappers just out of necessity, out of survival, but neither of us had any size yet. We'd gloved up with his mom's oven mitts and tried fighting each other for practice once. But we had to admit that, at best, we were just slap fighters, that our main and best defense would be to curl up like pill bugs, wait this next thrashing out. To try to avoid that, we hid. Surprise. And the main place we hid was the arcade down at the mall. It had started out as our place because, for the 2 years before he left, Rance had been the longtime Galaga champ. He would strut in every other week or so to leave his initials at the top of the high score reel. His quarters lasted forever, and my mom said so long as he was there, I could be too. Not that Rance watched me in the scratchy reflection of that plastic screen, or even knew I was alive and breathing the same air as him, but I guess the idea was that if my big brother was around, nobody would try anything with me. While Rance was doing his thing on Galaga, Martin and me, Coach was already calling him Frenchie, a name that would stick, would tag-team the games on the other side of the arcade. Zaxxon, Defender, Tempest. They were all too complicated. Were pretty much just quarter donation machines, but they were ours, pretty much. And everybody would be crowded around Rance's Galaga machine anyway, his eyes glassy, his right hand on that fire button an absolute blur, his forearms ridged with veins, his feet set one ahead and one back, the front knee bent like he was leaning against some great wind blasting out of the machine, and all he could hold on to was that joystick. If he really was piloting a fighter jet somewhere out there now, he'd shoot faster than anybody, and he'd never say die, would just keep taking on wave after wave of alien. Just, Martin and me talked about this, would he really cut his hair for the government? While Martin's hair just put a bullseye on his back, Rance's shaggy mane had always been hairsprayed what my dad, when he'd even acknowledge Rance, would call six ways from Sunday and halfway to an ass-kicking. I thought Rance's hair was the most amazing thing ever. Put him in a pair of tights, give him a mic, and he'd own any stage, would have the whole arena in the palm of his hand. My hair was a sandy throwback to some trapper or Indian agent or fallen Jesuit nobody in my family even remembered. We don't all come out looking full blood. Either that or the way to explain the difference between Rance and me had to do with whose eye my mom might have caught 9 months before I cried my way into the world, which I guess would explain the way my dad always watched me growing up, like he was looking for a trait he recognized that could confirm his suspicions. Anyway, with Rance gone, Martin and me figured it was my job to continue the family tradition. He stole all the quarters from his mom's ceremony jar, the one she saved to get them back to South Dakota every year, or at least pay for half a tank of gas, and we shrugged our way down to the mall, to the Goldmine Arcade. Trick was, though, we were the only ones who knew this was my night to carry on Rance's Galaga ritual. The place was packed, I mean. It was Friday night, right? We should have known. Except at first I thought this wasn't the usual crowd, but maybe it was. Everybody was already wearing their Halloween masks. The sign at the door said you'd get two free plays if you were in costume. Martin pinched my sleeve, pulled me deeper into the mall. What we needed were masks, or at least makeup, and we knew that the velvet ropes at the movie theater had metal balls at the top of their heavy little poles that screwed on and off. But we didn't need the balls, or the ratty ropes. What we needed was the grease rubbed onto the threads. Martin covered while I rubbed as much into the crook of my index finger as I could, then I covered for him, and in the long bathroom hall by the Orange Julius we applied our makeup. Martin got shiny war paint over the top of his face, including his eyelids, which was a pretty cool look, but then we ran out of grease partway through my Star Trek half-a-blackface plan, so I ended up having to smudge it around to try to pull off a black eye. Because that wasn't any kind of costume, just meant I hadn't mowed the lawn or something, we scrounged some lipstick from under the payphone, drew blood coming down from my nose and my mouth and my other eye, and, in a flash of inspiration, Martin traced a drippy line of red across the top of my forehead. 50 cents is 50 cents. Jess, the gold mine's attendant, looked back and forth from Martin to me. My belt was looped around my neck, its long tongue in Martin's hand, because I, the sandy-haired buzz cut of the two of us, was this Indian's prisoner. He nearly scalped me, I explained, tilting my head back to show off my bloody hairline. Good job, Jess said, extending one spindly hand to tug Martin's left braid, though he knew it was real. How? Martin said in his deepest voice, like this was a movie. Jess thumbed a dollar and quarters from the dispenser at his hip, passed them over. Where's your brother? He said to me then. He needs to defend his title. He's shooting commies, Martin said for me about Rance and mimed like he was Rambo with a Gatling gun, Arnold against the Predator. What game is that? Jess asked, looking over his shoulder like a new one had been delivered without his knowing. I'm getting the new high score, I said, and shouldered past, leading Martin by the leash he was still holding. Our idea had been to get me better and better at Galaga until I could fire as fast as Rance, until I knew all the patterns, could wipe out whole armadas of aliens. As it turned out, Janet Riley, a senior from the smoking circle, was already at the Galaga machine and drawing a crowd. Since she and Rance had been trading top slot on the high score list for the past year, I'd always kind of known they were going to have to start going out, like that was the rule. Unlike Rance's silent Indian routine, though, she was vocal, always chirping and screeching in retreat, snarling and growling when caught in a corner, then screaming when she shot her way out again, as if the aliens could hear her, be intimidated by her. Rance was more reserved, had a steadier game, knew the dive patterns, the levels, and he never made any real sound, would just thin his lips about this next challenge, but he'd had to respect Janet's game, I knew, especially the way her reflexes seemed to come alive best when the game was tilting against her. We tried watching for a couple of minutes, but the crowd was too thick, and a short skeleton right beside Janet kept inserting its index finger into its mask to pick its nose, so we took our quarters elsewhere. Centipede was open, but that was a panic attack waiting to happen. Joust would have been fun, but it was taken by the stoners, as usual. Track and field, Martin said, trying to make it sound better than it was. We padded our back pockets for the ace combs we'd need to pump that runner's legs fast enough. No luck. Counting the dollar Jess had given us for playing cowboy and Indian at the door, we had $8 total. We were in the gold mine, and we had a gold mine, yeah. So, I said. Hyperspace, Martin said with a shrug. It was what he called Defender, because when it got you back on your heels, you could push that hyperspace button, go to whatever random spacescape the game kicked up. Usually it meant instant death, just death in a different place, but you were diving anyway, right? Might as well blip across the galaxy. We ended up dropping $3 on asteroids, even though Martin had it on Atari at his house. His brother always hid the controllers, though, or else he'd reached his hand down the front of his pants for a long scratch session, then rubbed that hand all over the joystick, handed across. Like every time in Asteroid's field of space rocks, and in spite of our standing in place gymnastics, it was like we were really in the cockpit of that fragile little ship. We shattered into glowing lines that had just enough inertia to spin insultingly, like going down some cosmic drain. When we turned around, thoroughly beaten and breathing hard from it, three of the stoners were shaking their heads at our theatrics, at our wimpiness, at our make-do costumes. Jess, I said, my head on a swivel for the arcade's lifeguard. He's talking to that redhead at the hot dog stand again, the lead stoner said, his eyes still gliding on ostriches from platform to platform of Joust. He wasn't smoking, but he still smelled like a train. It's Rance's tag-along, the second stoner said, stepping in to get this started. Baby Red, the third of them said. Rance's initials should have been RATB for Rance Allen Two Bulls, but video game high score reels aren't made for Indians. So on Galaga, and in spite of his black hair, he'd always been Red, like claiming that top spot for all Indians everywhere. Since I was his little brother, I was Baby Red, I guess. This wasn't the first time they'd cornered us in their wall of grimy denim to claim all our quarters. But because it wasn't, I juked left, went right, shouting run to Martin while already doing it, picturing myself vaulting over 1942, driving through the cockpit of one of the racing games, tearing out into the food court. It all went pretty great in my head, I mean. They were older, though, and we were slower. Jess was AWOL, Rance was gone, and it was Friday night. It was nearly Halloween, which isn't when sixth graders have their best luck. We made it maybe three steps. What they took from me was my pocket full of quarters, which one of them hefted while watching me, as if judging this weight against my soul, or trying to gauge how many eggs this would be worth on Joust. What they took from Martin, with a yellow pocket knife sawed back and forth, was his right braid. Shit, that was real, the second of them said, holding Martin's hair up, covering his own mouth with his other hand, which just made his laugh louder somehow. Martin's chest was heaving, his eyes welling up. Not because he'd ever wanted that braid, but because his dad and brother were going to kick his ass when he came home lopsided, and then they were going to pile into the family car and find whoever had done this. It had happened before. Martin's dad had had to serve 3 months of weekends in county because someone had left a red handprint on the flank of their light blue Buick, so it could be a real war pony, ha ha. This time it wouldn't be just weekends, though, we knew, and there was no way Martin could hide what had happened. Because there was always the chance of Jess stepping back in, the hot dog girl in tow, the stoners crowded us into the back corner by the kiddie games and then pushed us behind them, into that dusty space of cables and cigarette butts and sticky bottles and gum and the one rubber everybody knew about. They were locking us up, making sure we wouldn't run tell, get them busted, maybe banned from the gold mine. To be sure the walls of our little prison cell held, they took our pants. To guarantee we wouldn't forget this any time soon, they forced our faces down into the grossest, stickiest spaces they could find behind the machines, then told us to count to 100 before we lifted our heads. If we didn't, they'd do it all over, and take our underwear this time. How would we like that? We laid there crying. Okay, Martin was maybe crying harder, I guess. He had reason. Me, I was staring ahead under the broken Ms. Pac-Man machine, waiting for this to be over. When I got up into the 80s with my count, I saw it. There, in the dust bunny-coated sludge under Ms. Pac-Man, was a glint of silver. We didn't go all the way to 100, wouldn't give the stoners that. We just listened to our heartbeats drum down slower and slower. Listened to each other's sobs become normal breathing. Normal enough. Our bare thighs were touching. Our faces were hardening into the floor. "Yet," I finally said. "Yet," Martin agreed, and I could hear his cheek peeling up. I wasn't stuck as hard, I didn't think, and still had one thing to do anyway. Reach forward, pitch into that sludge for that glint of silver. What I came back with was 1/4. "What year?" Martin said, because his luck system was that if the quarter was the same age as him, it was lucky. He would win with it. "Rance's age," I said, trying to clean the gunk off it. "Mail it to him," Martin said in defeat, and we sat there like that, making useless, quiet jokes, and detailing grand, never-to-be-enacted revenge plans until Jess turns the lights off, ran his vacuum cleaner over the more obvious parts of the arcade. Then the cage door came down. We were officially in jail. "I'm going to cut the other one off," Martin said, holding his left braid out. "I'm going to tell my dad I did it on my own." "He'll kick your ass for it," I told him. "Cops don't care about that," Martin said. He was right. It was a solid plan. We stood, no pants, and crept out among the machines, all of them still cycling through their holding screens. Jess hadn't pulled the plug, had probably been making a horny beeline for that hot dog girl. Martin was still in his black war paint. I was still some white dude who had almost got himself justly scalped. Still, walking through the arcade all alone, half naked, bathed in what felt like neon, it was kind of magic. Martin was the first to smile, but I caught it soon enough. We pushed our faces against the cage, looked out at the darkened mall. "We can erase them from Joust anyway, right?" Martin said at last. Like that, we were behind the machines again, hungrily tracing out cables. "This one," I said, and pulled it. We ran around, but Joust was still blinking. "This one," Martin said, pulling another, and we ran around again, but had only killed Galaxian. "Close," I said, and then touched my brother's initials on the Galaga screen, balled my hand fast around that, promised to never let it go. "What are you doing?" Martin asked. "This one," I said, sure this time, but when I pulled it, the whole junction thing it was plugged into yanked from the wall. The whole banks of machines behind us went dark. "Think you got it," Martin said with a thrilled chuckle, and we crept around. I had definitely gotten it, yeah. But then I realized what else I had got. Galaga. "Shit," I said, my face going cold. I'd erased Rance's last game, the high score he'd left behind for all of us to wonder at. Janet hadn't beaten him earlier. Nobody had beaten him. But now nobody would ever know. Martin's dad was going to kick his ass, yeah, but I was going to be kicking my own ass for twice as long. "I'll get it back for him," I said, holding that magic quarter up. Dutifully, we plugged Galaga back in, and after holding the quarter up between us, honoring its power, its promise, its birth year, I kissed it, thumbed it into the slot. It fell through to the change return. "What the hell?" Martin said. I inserted it again, and again it rattled down to that metal flap. Martin tried, same thing. We tried shooting it through harder. We tried rubbing all the quarter's edge grooves clean on the carpet. We breathed on it to make it hot. Nothing. "Cursed quarter," Martin said, shrugging. "Jess should give us a new one," I said, and looked around as if the ghost version of Jess might be skulking around, talking up the eighth graders. Because we knew we could make it last, we dropped the quarter in Pac-Man just to prove it was a real and actual quarter, but it hit the change return again. Every machine we tried, even the kiddie ones. "Hyperspace," Martin said, lifting his chin to defend her. "Like it'll," I said, thumbing the quarter in. But the machine took it before I could finish. I pushed back from the controls, giving them to Martin, but he stepped back as well, said, "It was Rance's year, he'd want you to." I dove in, grabbed the joystick right as the game went live, and did my usual thing I did with Defender. Held on, shot at complete random, stars streaking past at ridiculous speeds. "Hyperspace, hyperspace," Martin yelled when I was about to die. But I shook my head no, was in what felt like a Rance trance, was one with this game for once. I pulled up at every last moment, shot past, lived through. Maybe my problem all along at the arcade was that I'd been trying to play like Rance, when I was really a Janet player. I only came alive in a corner. Martin was breathing hard beside me, his hand on my shoulder, the grease sweating down his face like he was crying black. Maybe this was my game, I thought. Rance had Galaga, but me, I was Defender, right? I sure wasn't anything else. I fired faster, felt one foot creeping forward into my version of a power stance. It felt weird enough that I looked down even, and what I saw on the way was light bleeding out from the quarter slot. "What?" I said, and then Martin was lunging forward to jerk the joystick to the side, save my life. "Thanks," I yelled to him, taking control again. The light from the quarter slot was a hot spot on my bare thigh. I shifted away from it, felt the heat smear across to my other leg. "What was that quarter made of?" I said. And Martin nodded hard with this, because this was my best game ever, was the best we'd ever seen. Still, Defender being what it was, I finally had to scream and panic, slap the hyperspace button, because any point in space was better than where I was now. Like always, everything jumbled on the screen, and when I leaned over for a different angle, like I could get a bead on whatever forces I was about to blip down in front of, what I saw kind of in the reflection wasn't the game at all. I was behind the windshield of an 18-wheeler at night. I could tell it was a big rig from the height and from the monster of a steering wheel in my lap. And then I was nudging that wheel to the right just enough to edge my truck over into the ditch to tag the Indian walking on the shoulder, just turning around to hike his thumb up. That hitchhiker was Rance. I slapped hyperspace again to get away from this, keep it from having to happen. Now I was watching from behind a chain-link fence in Denver, watching Rance and three white dudes brush past each other on the sidewalk, Rance not giving room. Their shoulders hitting, tempers flaring, brake lights stopping in the street to help these three guys with this Indian, who I knew could have taken on two of them, maybe even three, but not a whole carload. I hit that button deeper to stop this from happening either, and I held it down this time, cycling through Rance's dying this way, that way, all the ways an Indian can die in America. Shot on a porch, sleeping under a bridge, caught in a car rolling through a fence, throwing up in his sleep. And when I finally, timidly let the button come back up, I was in the arcade again. My ship was blasting across the alien landscape, each orange mountain peak the leading edge of a massive lurking asteroid. The ship so fragile, and Martin was yelling my name, telling me, up, up! No, I said, using my whole body to move the joystick just the littlest bit. Martin moved with me, and then, he told me later, so I know it's true, he saw what I was seeing. My little ship in Defender was a dull gray fighter plane now, blasting faster and faster, its background a blur. Rance, I said, almost smiling. I'd blipped to a good version at last, a good outcome. This isn't... What game is this? Martin said, checking the side of the machine, like that could tell him anything. But it wasn't broke. I can do it. I can do it, I said, zoning in, the skin of my face going cold, my eyes speeding up to see everything at once, my hands hardly even connected to me anymore. They were so fast, so right, so true. And no one but Martin was there to see my game that night, the night I beat Defender, the unbeatable game. But I wasn't playing for them. All those lives I'd hyperspaced through, they were ways Rance could be out there dying, would be out there dying, unless I kept him alive. The stars blurred. My fingertip on that hyperspace button was both numb and more alive than it had ever been. And I fired, and I fired, and I fired deeper into the heart of whatever this was, clearing a path for him, one farther than I'd dad could ever reach, one that would get him away and safe and let him live the life he should have, that he deserved. What the hell? What the hell, man? Martin said beside me, his left hand worrying his left braid, his whole body bouncing on the balls of his feet. And if anybody would have looked through the cage, they would have seen 2 12-year-olds not yet ready for life, so unready that they didn't even have pants, their faces streaked black from tears, their eyes blasted wide for every alien, every way to die. In the morning when Jess opened up, we were sitting on the counter, still breathing hard, telling ourselves the story of this, and we were different now. We knew. We'd won. Real funny, losers, Jess said, stepping to the side so we could leave. You didn't break anything, did you? Just a high score, Martin yelled on the way past him, and then we ran without pants through the morning. Without pants and with sandy hair, with one braid, one black eye, and in the alley behind Martin's house, I cut his braid off to keep his dad out of jail, and we shook hands in the gangster way we'd seen in a music video, pointed at each other to end it. And I didn't mean to. It wasn't on purpose, but I took a mental snapshot of Martin anyway, leaned against the back fence, his hair so stupid, his eyes so nervous, his chest raised so he could fake like he was tough enough to walk inside. And I want to lie and say that when I was walking home that bright Halloween morning, a fighter plane cracked thunder over my street, punched through the sound barrier like it was nothing. But, though I closed my eyes to wait for just that, it didn't come, and didn't come. There was just me rushing from bush to bush, car to car, and somewhere far behind me, and also in my heart, a video game blinking red, red, red.
Welcome back. You've been listening to Scott Peterson reading I Was a Teenage Space Jockey by Stephen Graham Jones. We hope you enjoyed it. If so, please help spread the word by leaving a review or rating at iTunes or the social media venue of your choice. Our editor is John Joseph Adams, and this podcast is copyright 2021 by Adamant Press. Our sponsor this month is Tor Books, featuring Dune, The Lady of Caladan, by Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson. As a listener to this podcast, you know that we publish it and most of the rest of our content for free online. If you don't already support our Hugo Award-winning journal, please consider checking out our many options, including ebook subscriptions and recurring patronage at lightspeedmagazine.com/support. Skyboat Media, the most respected independent audio production team on the West Coast, produces the stories for this podcast. They are headed by the Audie and Grammy Award-winning narrators Stefan Rutnicki and Gabrielle DeCure. Be sure to check out their website at skyboatmedia.com. Post-production was by C'est Moi. Our music and sound logos were composed and performed by Jack Kincaid. Thanks for listening. That's all for now. See you on the Bitstream. I'm Jim Freund, wishing you cheers from all of us at
Lightspeed.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.